So I had a great intro with previous three talks, and which will help guide what I'm going to be showing you today. And most of the work that I'm showing started in Doug Billenberg's lab and spiraled from that. So genetics of chilling requirement in peach. Some of the previous speakers showed the map. This is how it happened in 2007 when I actually interviewed for the job in Clemson. There were no peaches in South Carolina. It unfortunately almost repeated this year. And the zones of the chill hour accumulation, this is the latest newest picture I could find, and this is way outside of what we experienced in last few years. So the significance and, of all of this we've heard from the previous talks, and I'm not going to spend time on that. We know that in the phenology talk, spring timing matters for the peach trees, and the dormant buds have the three primary mechanisms to modulate the timing of spring regrowth. One of those is chill requirement, heat requirement, and photoperiodism. And so what I'm going to be focusing here with the genetics is on the chill requirement and slightly touching the heat requirement as well at the end. So to talk about the chill requirement and floral bud development, we need to have a whole picture of what's going on throughout the season. And so this is a really nice figure from the Abbott et al. Chapter on and the review on the dormancy and genetics, which shows what's happening with the peach buds and as they set with the short day period and go into the end of dormancy, then start, progression, and the release, and then go into the ecodormant period, and which results in the bloom time. And so this is the annual cycle that happens, and so when the chilling requirement happens in the endodormant period, and the release will not happen until the trees get their chill requirement. So the most of the genes and genetics I'm going to be covering is in this period. So counting cold. What is chilling requirement? We already heard it, but I'll repeat it to serve my talk later. So obligate requirement for cumulative quantity duration of exposure to chill temperatures regardless of timing. We know that there are certain set temperatures when trees count cold, and if there is a following day with a very high temperature, that chilling will be negated. And also, as Greg mentioned in his talk, if the temperatures are really low, the trees don't count those temperatures. So dormant buds count and remember the cold. Detailed mechanism of counting and memory is still unknown, although much work was done, and the wide phenotypic variability in multigenic inheritance in prunus is observed. We have, as you've seen, trees that require zero or very low chills up to 1,000 or 1,200, as Tom said. So this is a wide variability of requirements that we need to understand on the genetics level. We were lucky in peach that we had a mutant, that ever-growing mutant that never sees growing. And so you can see here what the winter temperature does to the a constantly growing vegetative tissue. They basically freeze. So that mutant was used to understand what's going on with the dormancy requirements. And the characterization of that happened, started in 2004 and 2008 with Doug Billenberg. This particularly portrays the paper on sequencing and annotation of the region responsible for that, as Mike mentioned. It's a DAM a series of DAM genes. That region is a 40 kilobases deletion in the genome that causes the ever-growing phenotype. And so, previously unknown link between environmental induction of bud set and bud development was found and could be further exploited. This led into the series of mapping projects to actually find QTLs responsible for the chill requirement, and as a consequence of blooming, also bloom time QTLs. So the first paper that was published from Billenberg's group was in 2010, followed by also Billenberg improving the resolution with the SNP markers, because the initial work was done with the SSRs, and then recently done work on the some quantitative trait loci affecting some phenological traits, also chilling and the bloom time. This table is from the review of Abbott, that in the top you can see basically how many QTLs were detected for chill requirement in peach and some other prunus and some other tree species, because the review deals with trees in general, not just the prunus. And so, as I said already, this was the breaking research that was followed on the finding on the DIME genes in the ever-growing mutant, and basically explained and answered the question of how many genes we could expect that are governing the chilling requirement and bloom time in prunus or in peach. We found the Fan et al. Work, as I'm showing here the map, found 10 to 15 regions in the genome, as you can see them with these bars, but only three of those were actually significantly associated with the chilling and repeated throughout the year of phenotyping. And one of those on the chromosome 1 is the one associated with the DAM genes, dormancy-associated Madbox genes. And in this region, the series of the six DAM genes is found that are involved with the chilling. Out of those, two genes are actually particularly responsive for the induced in the short days and repressed by cold, and considered as a candidate genes for setting the chill requirement in peach. Those are DAM5 and 6. There are two independent reports that are associated with low chill alleles at DAM5 and 6 with transposon insertions in promoters. There is a additional research that was recently published that uncovers the epigenetic role in DAM6 suppression of chill with some methylation that's happening in the DAM6, where we have translation start site progressively loss of the translation progressive site, and getting a new marks after chilling is complete. So there's much to research to see what's going on, not just on the genetic side, but on the methylation side of the DNA and the epigenetics, which we are just starting to uncover. There was recent work on the Zhabentyaeva et al., which was previously a researcher in Abbott's lab, on the work that was following this initial QTL mapping. So taking the two extreme phenotypes from that population, they zoomed into the region and sequenced the region to understand what actually is going on. Yes, we knew that DAM5 and 6 were responsible, but we wanted to see the contrast in two individuals. And among beside those three DAM genes, two DAM genes responsible for chilling, she also reported on transcription factors, chromatin remodeling genes, and hormone metabolism and transport. Similar research was published recently in Apple by Israeli group, and they also reported on a haplotype associated with the low chill requirement in a cultivar Anna that was basically used as a donor of that trait in the breeding programs. So after seeing all of this work, what we try to do, we try to use the data that we already had, the genotyping data for the material in the rose breed project, and overlay the regions in the peach for the two, for the QTL on the chromosome 1. So we try to see the recombination points, and we found one in the region. That's why we have two blocks, block 1 and block 2, that are really close and tight regions, and to look if we can find how many different variations within the region we have in the peach material. And so we found that there are 6 different variation of the markers, order of the SNPs, if you want it, that are inherited in that particular order in the peach material for the region 1, and 7 on the region 2. When we overlay that with the phenotypic data to see if we could find the version of the region that's actually associated with a low or high chill, these two graphs basically represent for the region 1 and region 2. Our data was unfortunately of low resolution because the phenotypes were taken every 100 hours, and for this particular type of work, we actually need a high resolution, and that's something that we are planning to repeat and try to do it again. And so taking into account the literature reports for the cultivars released, and as you heard Greg's talk, usually what we report is somewhere in the middle, so the cultivar can go 100 hours lower or higher, so that influenced the results that I'm showing here. But one of the things outside of this is to show that the genotype that has AA haplotypes, so basically both from the mother and the father inheritances, these sets of genes in both of these regions is having the highest chill requirement. So we are on the right track, and we are seeing that there are different variation in the genome that we can associate with the chilling. We just need a better resolution to actually answer this. So how do we find the phenotypes that we want? Warming winters are requiring development of lower chill varieties. That's a problem. And all of this QTL mapping is leading to using the marker-assisted selection for the chilling. That's easier said than done, unfortunately, because there is a problem. If we go lower with the chill, we force earlier bloom and extend a window for the freeze to happen. So we have to balance the chill requirement. And oh, of course, this is a sad picture that happened this year in South Carolina, where we lost 90% of our crop due to the freeze. So as a breeder, I have several questions that when I was talking to Doug Bielenberg about this talk. Can I breed a climate-resilient peach to avoid spring frost and not only address the chilling requirement, but also address the heat requirement? And how do I do that? So how do we phenotype the heat requirement? And because if you see from these two graphs, the bloom dates that we usually use to assess the chill requirement in the varieties are very variable. These are 4 different years and the same material phenotype, and you see how it's skewed left or right depending on the season. So they change yearly, which of course makes bloom date inadequate way of phenotyping for chill requirement. So we know that they are variable across varieties. We need to know what is the nature of effect of chilling on the heat requirement, and is the relationship between the chilling and heat similar across the varieties. So model prediction bloom data, as you've seen before, have a general flow where they assume a two-phase chill, then a heat accumulation to bloom, and this is wrong. Why is it wrong? It's because chilling alters the heat requirement. So the more chilling the trees get, and in a shorter period of time, the less heat they will require to bloom, and opposite. And so we cannot look just at the chilling without looking at the heat. They are intricately connected and their crosstalk. So Dr. Oki's paper in 2011 showed that, and also similar conclusions were made on the Douglas fir research. So what next step that we are trying to do is actually answer how do we count the heat requirement? And recent work published from Brazilian group reported that there is no base temperature for starting the heat requirement counting in plants, in peach, is not the same for every tree. And again, the more chill the tree gets, the base temperature for starting the chill accumulation is lower and smaller amount of heat requirement the tree needs. So there's much work for our labs to be done to answer all of these questions, and we are trying to find a way to actually combine what's previously done with the research that's laying in ahead of us. So quantitative descriptions must be made of the dynamic relationship between chilling and heat for improved modeling. This is probably where we are missing some cues when we are trying to model for this. So that's what I had. Thank you for the attention, and any questions? The question is, with the number of QTLs detected, how much variation there are among different QTLs for the chill requirement, yes? We were focusing mostly on the QTL on chromosome 1 because that was shown to be the highest association with the DAM 5 and 6. But now in the light of this heat requirement and everything, I think we're going to have to go back and revisit what's going on these other locations throughout the genome, to, especially for those 2, 4, and 7 that were significantly associated with the chill requirement in the FANS paper. Because initial work, it looked easy, you know. Some things with the genetics in peach is such a great model that you get fooled thinking, oh, that's an easy thing, one or two genes. And then as you dig further, it uncovers that there's actually much a bigger picture behind. And now playing with the heat requirement, we really need to know what's going on. So to answer the question, we did not look further, but now with this new lights of research that's coming from these different groups, we're going to go back. Yes?
Have you done any work on the photoperiod?
The question is, have we done any work on the photoperiod, and if would that be of interest? That would be of interest, especially as Michael said, in rosaceous species, some of them react to the photoperiodism as peach does. Some of them don't, as apple. So for apple, you need a temperature. For peach, you need a photoperiodism, so shortening, and a lower temperature to start the endodormancy. And so that's an excellent question, and I think we should include those genetics of those cues also into the picture, just to holistically to look at the whole thing, not just at the one thing at a time. That was the question at the end of the paper. When I was reading it, they found those methylation differences, but did not the sampling, that the way they did it, could not answer the question, what was the cue for the methylations? So it opened the question of actually looking into the epigenetics, not just genetics, for the chilling.
Please give one more round to our speakers. Thank you.